And welcome everyone to another edition of Orlando Magic Pod Squad. On this edition, we catch up with Magic assistant coach Jesse Mermis, kind enough to join us and give us some insight into the behind-the-scenes work that this incredible staff assembled by Jamal Mosley has done this year and the last 3 years here in Central Florida. Magic Pod Squad brought to you by the Florida Department of Transportation. Reminds you that fans don't let fans drive drunk. If you've been drinking, don't get behind the wheel. Instead, find a sober driver or catch a ride service. Remember, drive sober or get pulled over. Have a great night and drive safe. On this episode with Jesse Mermis, we get into his NBA journey, what led him to being on the sidelines for an NBA team, and did he ever think he'd get that opportunity? How it is working for Magic head coach Jamal Mosley, and what is so special about Paolo Banchero in this edition of the Orlando Magic as they make their playoff push down the stretch. Lots of fun with Jesse Mermis on this edition of Magic Pod Squad.
This is Fonz Wagner of the Orlando Magic.
This is Cole Anthony.
This is Jalen Suggs.
This is Paolo Banchero of the Orlando Magic, and you're listening to the Pod Squad.
And welcome, everyone, to the latest edition of Orlando Magic Pod Squad. Dante Marcatelli, George Galante, Jake Chapman here with you. And it is our pleasure to welcome in Orlando Magic assistant coach Jesse Mermis, kind enough to join us. And George and Jake, just so you know, he's already, there's one thing that he does that none of us do, and that is work out. That is work out. And no surprise to anybody. But how about that? We get in not too bad last night, right, coach? We get in about 1 in the morning to the hotel, and you've already got yourself a workout at the time of this taping here in New York City. You're already up and at it.
Yeah, I was pretty pumped that we pulled that one out. So I had a lot of energy. I didn't sleep much.
Is that what happens? Do you got to get up first thing in the morning after a big win like that and get off some of that energy?
Yeah, well, it was, as you know, every back-to-back game in the NBA is an adventure. And it was looking pretty bleak there. Thank goodness that Mo's had an unbelievable halftime because we were able to pull that thing out. And so I was pretty pumped because I knew we had a day off today in New York, and I knew it would be ruined if we lost that game. So.
Well, that's right. Well, you guys handled your business. No, it's interesting, Jesse. We want to get your story, and for everybody listening, we're going to go back and tell your story, your NBA journey, kind of how you got into the NBA and if that was the goal and all that. But since you touched on it, it's remarkable timing because, you know, Josh Robbins was there from The Athletic. And, of course, we know Josh Robbins in Orlando. And he wrote a nice story about Coach Mosley and how about he should be considered Coach of the Year this year in the NBA and the great job that his staff does and all of that. But what was different about that halftime last night? Because that came out in that article as well.
Well, you know, we typically have a routine where, you know, coach will address the team. I'll show some offensive adjustments. Coach Oz will show some defensive adjustments or things that are hurting us. And then, you know, we'll bring it in and go out there. And he just kind of passionately kind of woke them up, said some really some good words that I won't repeat, but we didn't show any film. You know, it wasn't really about basketball and the X's and O's. And thank goodness he hit it right on the head. And our guys were able to respond, as they always do to him.
Yes, yes.
Jesse, what do you feel like has flipped this year as opposed to maybe last year? It's basically the same roster for the most part. Is it a matter of having the same group for an extended period of time? Is it something else that you guys have seen behind the scenes that has clicked this year? What is making this team into what is becoming, we're a top four team right now in the East.
Yeah. That's a pretty dynamic question. And there's, I think, a lot of factors. But I would say the biggest thing, tipping my hat to the players, I feel like they all, player development wise have really improved and collectively they've taken a big jump. And then obviously Paolo and Franz have taken a big jump, and because of the improvement that they've made because of their hard work, when you have that type of improvement from year to year, then it helps the players kind of guide them into more roles and responsibilities. And I think what to all the guys' credit is they're all buying into what the team needs to win the very next game. And we have a little bit more of a role definition going on with Paulo and Franz kind of leading the charge. And so that puts you, you know, more in a win now mode as opposed to a development mode. And really that's, you know, it's a tribute to Mo's with obviously the culture and everything that he's established. And then to the players for working their tails off, buying in and doing what it takes to win.
Hey guys, can we mark this too? Because that was the first time somebody said that I asked a dynamic question. Just want to make sure for the record that we have that down, that's the first time.
We're well aware that that's the first time.
Just want to make sure.
I'll clip it.
Thank you.
We'll get it on the social channels. Coach, Steve Clifford the other day was talking about Paulo, and he mentioned specifically when your best player sets that kind of example, everybody else is sort of forced to fall in line. And we'll throw Franz in that as well. The day-to-day, the long NBA season, the record against sub-500 teams, second nights of back-to-backs, it can be, I think, difficult to get up for games sometimes in the early part of February, for instance. But when you got Paulo and Franz, who play every night and take every game as seriously as they do, it's just sort of the nature of the rest of the roster to fall in line, right?
Yeah, it's really impressive because I've been so fortunate to be with so many of these young stars in today's NBA just because of my stops around the league. And the biggest thing that is hard for these guys to do is be consistent. You know, there's so many players in the NBA that can go out on a night and have a big game, have a, you know, 35 and even have a win streak going and play really well for a time period and then fall off for a while. The consistency that Paulo has shown for a second-year player is incredible. And so he's a big-time player. Mentally, he's so tough. And his consistency is what made him an all-star, and that consistency is what, you know, gets you into the playoff contention.
Jesse, I always think the sign of a great staff is how you can kind of keep the team afloat even when you're losing players, you know, to injury or out of the roster or whatever. And there is a way that this team plays, and it has been since Coach Mosley and this staff got here. There's a way that this team plays. And I think that's another thing, to Jake's credit, that Steve Clifford said the other day. But last night in Washington, D.C., it's a sluggish start. You're starting two Green Goblins. You've had over 30 starts for two Green Goblins, right, with Goga Patasi and Anthony Black. But there's a way you play where there's expectations for those guys when they come in to not have a drop-off. Just touch on the job that the role that you play and this coaching staff with keeping, no matter who it is, ready every night.
Yeah, well, I think that what you guys see across the NBA and with the scoring and the just the offensive numbers league-wide are incredible, obviously. And there's a lot of factors of that, obviously. I know Coach Kerr and some of the head coaches have complained about the officiating and the rule changes to try to encourage scoring. But also a lot of that is that the culture of defense hasn't really, from a coaching body, it has kind of gone away as well, because it's just so hard to get these guys to be able to play both sides of the basketball with the schedule. You know, there's a lot of factors to that. And so really it goes back to, again, Mo's driving home that you have to play defense here to get on the floor. And when you're held accountable for playing defense, it's a lot easier for a guy to go in there and plug in knowing that he has to play defense than a guy going in there thinking, hey, I need to show out and score and do, you know, do some, you know, spectacular thing to try to keep this spot. And so I think that, you know, from day one, we've been a defensive-minded team. Our, you know, everything that we do is defense first. And we've been able to stick to that because of Mo's. And so when you do that, I think, you know, the guys at some point, they have to fall in line. They either got to play defense or they're not going to play. So he's made that very clear. And to those, you know, to our players' credit, they play defense.
Yeah, I mean, I know if I was on the roster and I wasn't playing defense, I would want to get on the floor. So that would get my rebound on the floor for sure. Jesse, let's go to you personally just for a little bit. Did you ever think starting out in South Point Catholic High School that 20 years later you'd be on the biggest stage, the brightest lights? Talk about your start and where you thought this thing was going to take you.
Well, it's so funny that you asked that because I actually did think that. And that maybe was my problem a little bit as a player because all the way up until I stopped playing, I really believed I was going to play in the NBA. I mean, I had a very naive, incredible belief and was a big-time dreamer. And so even when, I finally stopped chasing the basketball dream from a player standpoint, I always, as soon as I started coaching, I believed that I would be coaching in the NBA. And so, it was very vivid to me. It was very real to me. And I just took every step towards that, as my North Star. And I remember, you know, I've been with my wife, Michelle, for a really long time. We met in college. And I remember we were taking a road trip. I was coaching in an AAU tournament in Las Vegas, and we had to drive there. And I remember we pulled off. We were having a sandwich, like a stop. And I remember telling her, you know, I'm going to coach in the NBA, and we're going to be fine. It's going to be all good. Because I think at the time I wasn't making any money and, you know, it's a really big time struggle, obviously, to be a basketball coach. If you're looking to establish a family and, you know, do the real world stuff because you just don't make any money, for a really long time. And so I remember telling her that and I remember her being like, oh, okay. I didn't know how convinced she was, in that. But she vividly remembers me saying that. And so
you were a high school coach at that point, Jess?
Yeah, I was a high school coach at that point. And I remember when I did get to the NBA, I remember her reminding me of that conversation.
It's a great story.
Powerful stuff. Coach, who are a few? I'm sure you could do a whole podcast on this question, but who are a few figures along the way who opened doors for you and maybe gave you little pat on the butt along your way to get you to this point?
Well, growing up in Tucson, Arizona, Lute Olson was like he was the man. I mean, he was so presidential. They were winning at such a high level. He was everything. If you loved basketball, I mean, you looked up to this guy. He was incredible. Incredible coach, incredible person. The way he carried himself and spoke and everything. And so I would say he was a big inspiration for me. and then when I got to the NBA, my first gig with the Denver Nuggets, I was so fortunate to be with George Karl and Tim Gergovich, who were just longtime old school NBA coaches, because it really gave, I think Mo's would say the same thing, it really set us up with a foundation of, you know, doing things the right way, how things need to be done, how to pour into the players. And that really set us up for success in the NBA.
You know, it's interesting, Jesse. You start, you know, you're in community college, and then you're in Southern Utah, and then you go back to Arizona. Your break in the NBA, right? I think you started in video with Denver, as you mentioned. That's when you met Jamal Mosley. You ultimately met Masai Ujiri with your time in Denver. But when you get that big break, now you're trying to work your way up the ranks. I mean, what was that conversation like in that move when you're starting your NBA journey with the Denver Nuggets? A really good, by the way, really good Denver teams.
Yeah, it was It was so much fun. I mean, it was incredible hours. I remember I didn't really see my, you know, my wife, we'd moved to Denver. We were in this tiny shoebox of a place. And I remember I just did not see her. I mean, I was there 24/7. It was extremely demanding, but it was so much fun. That team, the players, with, you know, Carmelo Anthony and J.R. Smith and Birdman and all Chauncey Billups, like all these guys, like I was learning from them just as much as I was learning from the coaches. It was an unbelievable time because of one. I mean, we were obviously really good, but like with having Kenyon Martin and Nene, all these guys were so tough, and it was such a the culture of it was toughness, and everyone was riding each other. And if you didn't have thick skin around there, you were going to be in trouble. So it was like, I mean, throwing you to the wolves, and you're having, I'm getting yelled at by the players. I was getting yelled at by Coach Carl, by Tim Gergovich would take me to the side and just blast me for five minutes.
For what? Because it wasn't what they were asking for wasn't set up, or what would they get?
Maybe some of that. I was an extremely hard worker, but it was more of like, that's kind of like the culture. It just goes down the hill a little bit, and it's like breaking you in, pushing you.
Gotcha.
It was very old school NBA. And so that pushed me to the limit, and I was so excited, and I just kept asking for more. I wanted more all the time. And so whatever they threw at me, I tried to exceed expectations. And because of that, I was able to rise really quickly in Denver.
That's awesome. See, that would have pushed George right out of the NBA.
I would have just quit. I
would have been in tears.
That would have been it. But speaking of the grind, I mean, like, then you are also a head coach, Jesse, in the G League. And Dante and Jake are soft. They've never had to take any time in the minors. So,
right. This is true.
Explain to everybody out there. I mean, I worked in a minor league hockey team for 4 years, and there's just something different about working in the minor leagues where your staffs are much smaller, and you feel like it's us against the world. Is that how it was for you when you were had your time in the G League?
I love the G League. That is the greatest league in the world. From a pure basketball standpoint, it's exactly how you're describing it. It's so amazing. Yeah, because everybody there is in it to try to make it. And it's just like a grind league. And they know, you know, everybody there also knows that they got to do it together to make it happen for everybody. And it's a beautiful league. The coaching is big time. You're able to learn so much because of the style of play. It pushes you basketball wise because guys are in, guys are out. There's constant change. It's just an incredible league to develop your skills. And it's so much fun. You know, it's just a pure basketball experience because there's just not as much attention. There's not as much business and money involved. So it's just pure basketball all day long, every day. And I loved my time there.
I work in radio. That's the G League of sports broadcasting.
You're right. That's true.
Coach, when you became the head man for Raptors 905, what was there a, hey, you're the man now moment? I mean, that level of leadership is a little bit different when everybody is looking to you for those answers. Was that an eye-opening experience for you?
I think maybe the first, I think our first game was a close game on the road in Fort Wayne, and it came down to ATO by myself. And I remember running a play that I had seen a million times that Greg Popovich had run for Manu Ginobili and won the game. And it's a pretty ballsy call because you're setting up a back door. And it's a very unsafe play to run. But my style is very unsafe and pretty brazen. So my first time out, I'm trying to win the game, and I draw up a play, a Popovich play. And so short story goes is that the play did not work. It was not applicable for the level of play of my guys. They're G League guys. They just don't have the experience to execute that type of play. But again, you know, you're right in the heat of the moment. You're trying to go for the win, and you're just like, let's do this. So the play doesn't work. They get the ball, and they go down there and hit a game-winning shot.
Oh, no.
At the buzzer, and like a pull-up three, kind of like the one that Fox hit on us when we played Sacramento. Yeah. He's like coming up, you know, just a little bit past half court. So they hit a game-winning shot. And I remember walking to the locker room and being like, man, was that a bad play? So that was probably my first moment of like, you know what? Like, you know, you have to be a little bit more mindful of who you're dealing with and what their capabilities are. This is not the NBA.
Mm.
And so that was like a big time lesson. Like I had let those guys down, and I knew right away. And when I addressed them in the locker room, I apologized and say, yo, that was a bad play call. That's my fault.
Well, it probably didn't help that you called one of your guys Tim Duncan. It helps when you have Tim Duncan, Tim Duncan help you execute those plays. Well, now let's fast forward, Jesse, to 2021. You get the call from Jamal.
Okay.
He's taking the job here in Orlando, and he wants you to be on the staff, right? You had a nice relationship, but I would imagine that's how it goes in this business, right? You meet people along the way, and you never know who's going to get the job first and who's going to call who and where you're going to end up. But how about that phone call that he was coming to Orlando and putting a team together here?
Yeah, I was super excited. I had known, obviously, Jamal for a really long time. And we had a great relationship when we worked together, and we stayed connected through that entire time. I was excited because I knew, obviously, what he was capable of as a coach. And then I was really excited for the opportunity, because I love when organizations pick a lane and really, like, it's clear-cut what they're trying to do. And I thought Orlando was one of those situations. I think it's really tough in the NBA when, you know, everyone says you don't want to be in the middle. Like, you don't have a chance to win a championship, but you're good enough to, you know, kind of win. So are you developing? Are you winning? I think it's really tough from a coaching standpoint to try to pull that off. And so this was a clear-cut situation. We were going in at ground zero, and we were going to, you know, try to build something. And, you know, that's very exciting to me, and I'm very passionate about that. And so I was all in.
Jess, what about the other call that Mose gives you that first year where he's got COVID? And
yes,
Nate Tibbetts has COVID, and you're the guy, and you're going to be the guy to lead us for a few games while these guys are getting healthy. What was that experience like for you? Was it as surreal as it seems? Because if that was me, I probably would have to pinch myself 20 times a day.
Yeah. So, well, it was a little tough because this amazing thing was happening for me, but at the same time, I didn't want to be like overexcited and happy because my guys had COVID and it was like a tough time. So it was like, it was kind of, you know, just mixed emotion a little bit. But again, I'm a 5'9 little spark plug that's coaching in the NBA. And if I didn't have a ton of confidence in my abilities, I wouldn't be able to survive out there and provide value. And so there wasn't a moment where I was nervous. Like, I was ready to go, obviously. Like, and it, once, you know, it settled in, I was excited for the opportunity. And I wish, you know, I would coach as many times as I could possibly get. So, yeah, it was weird because I definitely didn't want those guys to have COVID and not be there and not right. coach the team. But I was obviously really excited for the opportunity, and I just tried to enjoy it and felt really ready and prepared for it.
And he was, guys. He was a spark plug during those timeouts. I got to stick my nose in those huddles, and he was fired up during those timeouts, which was great. What can you tell us about Jamal Mosley? You probably know him better than anybody, Jesse, having known him as long as you have. And we do, you know, we do hope he's in the conversation for Coach of the Year, because what this team has done, and the staff included, is just remarkable, now sitting fourth in the Eastern Conference. I mean, it's been so long here in Central Florida to be in this position. What do you, can you tell us about the person he is and how hard Jamal Mosley works?
Yeah, I don't know how he does it. I really don't know how he does it, because, you know, my calling card for my entire coaching career has been that I have unlimited energy. I have tons of positive energy, and that has been like a separator for me. And this guy blows me out of the water. I really don't know how he does it. He's incredibly hardworking, and he's incredibly caring and kind to these players. And that, you know, that plays out all the time. And they respond for him because, you know, because he comes with such a low ego, kind mindset, and treats everyone from top to bottom wonderfully. And he's backing it up with the work that he puts in, and what he says he lives up to. And so, you know, he's a big time guy, and he's doing a great job. And I'm just happy to be along for the ride.
I say the same thing, Dante, because I've asked Jamal one time. I was like, "You're so positive." Like, I picture he just goes home, and maybe there's a room or there's area of his garage where it's just like holes are punched in the wall or something, because you just don't see it at any point. At any time you come to the office, he's positive. You get in at 3 a.m. on the road, he's positive. Like, the guy is just overflowing with positivity, to the point where I was just like, this can't be. You can't be. There's got to be something where I'm missing. You got a punching bag or something at home that you're taking it out on, or something. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's mind-boggling. It really is.
Oh, it's impressive.
The metal, to heavy metal music on his way in.
Try to get it out of the...
This is the last thing for me, Coach, because I did want to ask you this about Coach Mosley and the trust that it seems like he has from 1 through 18 on roster. We've seen a handful of players close games out. I always say on the broadcast, he's a dance with who brung you type of coach. And whoever's got the hot hand or the matchup that night is going to finish games. And obviously, Paolo and Franz and Jalen are probably going to be on the floor. But, you know, whether it's Cole or Mo or Joe, on down the line, whoever is playing well that night likely is going to close that game out. That's kind of stokes trust and gets everybody engaged, doesn't it? I mean, guys show up and they know, if I've got to go in tonight, I'm going to be on the floor to close the game out. It just seems to me like it's, you know, there's a lot of sort of statuses and agendas with players across the league. And it seems like Coach Mosley has figured out a way, and the players as well, to eliminate all of that stuff. Whoever's got it rolling is going to finish the game out tonight.
Yeah, well, that kind of is the end result of a ton of work up front to build a relationship with each player.
Yeah,
like this is a business, but it's a human business. You know, to get a group of young individuals who have everything in this business is telling them to do what's best for themselves and be individual. And there's a lot of reward when you do that, unfortunately, how it's set up. And so to get guys to be okay with that mentality, to do what's best for the team all the time, it takes a lot of work and a lot of time and a lot of relationship building and a lot of communication, a lot of ups and downs. You have to work extremely hard to build that type of trust and build that type of patience with each guy. I mean, these are young guys who have a lot at stake for their family. And so I think it goes to, you know, just how he treats people. And I think our staff as a whole is along those lines of just philosophy wise. We really put the players first and we really, you know, shoot them straight. And I think they appreciate that. And when you have that type of close knit bond with your players and you're able to tell them when they're messing up and what needs to be done to win that game, whether that's sitting on the bench that night and not closing the game, I think they all believe and they know that we have their best interests at heart. And Mose has really worked his tail off for them to buy into that, believe that, and accept that. And so it's all about relationships. It's all about the human connection with these guys. And when you have that in place, then you're able to make those type of decisions. And, you know, the other night, Paulo wasn't very good to start the third quarter. He was turning it over. He looked frazzled. You know, I still think he was dealing, you know, he's still not 100% healthy. And it was clear he needed a reset. You know, we went to the timeout, you know, there's only played four minutes into that third quarter. And I remember we went to the timeout and he looked at me, Mose did, and we were both like, yeah, let's get him out. You know, he needs a reset. He needs time. He's not playing well. He's hurting us. And we'll get him out and we'll get him back in. And he sat the entire third quarter, which is obviously very unusual to take your best player out that early in a half. But to Paulo's credit, he's such a pro and we have that trust with him and we have that relationship with him. He came back to start the fourth quarter and he single-handedly destroyed them to start the fourth and forced a double team at the end to allow Jalen Suggs to hit that three to seal the game in that Utah game. So, you know, that's a lot of a lot of credit to Mose to be able to build a relationship and trust with a guy like that, to be able to take a guy out like that early in a half. That just doesn't happen very much in the NBA.
Let me just add credit to Mose and his staff, because when you talk to Coach Mosley about it, the first thing he does is he gives credit to you guys.
That's right.
And everybody involved. So, but that's great stuff, Coach. We appreciate that.
That's great. And I tell you this, to have that human side of it, it's refreshing. Because there's all walks of life, you know, there's humans involved and you don't hear that it's humans first. And I think that's outstanding. Last thing, we watched Paulo make his NBA debut last year and I'm working the game with Quentin Richardson and we sit in the back and we're, you know, 5 minutes into the game and he looks at me and he goes, Dante, we got a dude. We have a dude. I watched, took 5 minutes of his first NBA game. And since you mentioned Paulo, we'll end with that. As Magic fans get excited and as we gear up for this playoff push and who knows where this is going to take you, it's just so exciting here in Central Florida. How much does he help having that guy when you put a game plan together and as you think about this playoff push? How incredible is Paulo Banchero?
He's incredible. I've been so fortunate to be around some big-time players in my journey in the NBA. DeMar DeRozan, Kyle Lowry, James Harden, Carmelo Anthony, LeBron James. I mean, I've been around the big dogs, and he is one of those big dogs.
That's awesome.
A big-time player. He is a dude, as Q said, he's one of those dudes, and Orlando is going to be very fortunate for a long time.
Good stuff. Well, we appreciate it, Jesse. Good luck the rest of the way. And we'll try to close this thing out in New York, and we're excited here at the Final 19. Best of luck.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. That'll do it for this edition of Magic Pod Squad. We'll see you next time.